Well, welcome everybody. You know, when it comes to Christianity, there's one thing that most people find out first. If you don't know anything about following Jesus or Christianity in general, the thing that most of us learn right away, even if you're brand new, is that Jesus died on a cross. In this series, what we want to talk about is, why did Jesus die? Why is that such a big part of what it means to follow Jesus? And some of you might say, and if you've been in church for a little while, that the answer to that question is that Jesus died for our sins. And that is true. And yet there is sort of a mystery to that. Well, that still doesn't explain. Did Jesus have to die? Why did he have to die? Why did he have to die on a cross? Why did he have to die the way that he did? Why is that such an emphasis? Did God require that Jesus die? And if so, how does that make sense? And how do we work through that? And there's a lot of theories about why Jesus died. And in this series, as we talk about what that looks like and we try and answer that question, I want to start with the account of Jesus' death and what leads up to Jesus' death in the Gospel of Mark. If you've been with us through this summer, we've been working through the whole Gospel of Mark, the study of Mark's account of Jesus' life, and now we come to his death and his resurrection. And where we might go to a whole bunch of different places to try and come up with our theories to answer the question, why did Jesus die? I want to start right here with the gospel story of Jesus' life. Sometimes we start to read other parts of the New Testament, letters from Paul, for example, as he tries to make sense of the death and then the resurrection of Jesus. And when we do that, sometimes we start with what Paul says and we try and fit the stories of Jesus into that. And what I think we need to do is start with the stories of Jesus himself and his death, and then go back and find out how what Paul says was building on or interpreting that. So we're going to start here in the book of Mark, and today there's going to be 3 weeks in this series, and we're going to come at it from three different angles. Some are more intellectual or theological, but today I want to come at it from an experiential perspective. I think it's what Jesus prepares his disciples for and how he prepares his disciples for his death. And he does it by instituting a ritual at a meal. Now, to understand this a little bit, there are some meals that you might have had this experience, you probably have, that communicate more than words can. Just by who's sitting around the table, by the traditions that you have, by the relationships that you have, the fact that you sit and eat with certain people at a certain time in a certain way, communicate more about your relationship with each other than you could by actually talking through it and trying to explain it. So for example, I have a group of friends. We've been friends, some of us, for like 20 years. And over the years, so much has changed about our lives. We've all gone through different phases. We've finished school. We've got jobs. We've got married. Some of us have had kids and pets, and we've gone through all kinds of different things in life. But over the years, we started a tradition where we would get together and we would have a meal in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so every year we come together, and that meal looks very much the same year to year. We have the same kind of foods. In fact, we do kind of the turkey and potatoes and stuffing, Christmas, Thanksgiving type of stuff. But early on, one of our early dinners where we started this tradition, we were talking about who's going to bring what, who's going to prepare this and that, make sure that we have everything that we need. And some of us, when we were listing the foods, someone said, oh, I'll bring the Jell-O. And it became this kind of funny debate that we had because some of us had this tradition where at a Christmas or Thanksgiving type meal, you have Jell-O as part of the main course. And then others of us, like me, think that that's a ridiculous notion. Like we take something that looks like it should be a kid's dessert and somehow it makes its way into the main course of one of the most important meals of the entire year. And I don't understand that. That was never a tradition in my family or anything that was known to me. But my wife's family had it, and so it was very normal to her. Every time we have these big meals, we have Jell-O. And so we and the group of friends were kind of split on it, and we laughed about it and made jokes about it. But Jell-O became part of the tradition. And now every year, when we have the turkey and the stuffing and the potatoes and the vegetables, there's also Jell-O. And we sit around this great meal with the Jell-O. And we tell stories and we tell jokes and we laugh, we have fun, we celebrate. But more than what is said in that circle is experienced by this tradition. And just the fact that we go and we do these traditions and we sit together and come together reminds us who we are, reminds us of our relationships, our friendships that we have, the past, the present, and into the future. And so Jesus does that with his disciples before his crucifixion. They're sitting at a Passover meal. They're Jewish people celebrating the Passover. And at that meal, that relational gathering, Jesus gives them an invitation. He invites them to experience the pattern of the spiritual life. And in it, I'm going to read just one verse where he takes bread and then after he'll take wine. And what he does with the bread and the wine, I think, is an invitation for them, again, to experience the breadth of his life, his spiritual life, and for them to take it into themselves, internalize it, because they'll eat and they'll drink, and therefore to participate in it. And that experience becomes something that we call communion or the Lord's Supper or the Eucharist that followers of Jesus still do today. We're going to do together today. And it's one that reminds us more than words can say of our relationship to Jesus, our relationship to one another, remind us of who we are. Now, in this short verse, there's four words that I want to talk about. Henry Nouwen, who's a great Christian teacher, spiritual teacher, he takes these four words and says that what Jesus does with the bread and then with the wine, it really represents the entire pattern of the spiritual life. And he offers it to us as an invitation for us to experience. What he says about the bread is true of himself, Jesus. And it's also an invitation for us to experience it and to have it to be true of our lives as well. So I'm going to read the verse and just take those four words, four verbs, and talk about what they mean, what they can mean to us in our lives. And so in Mark chapter 14, verse 22, as Jesus is sitting in this meal, this is what he says. As they were eating, Jesus took some bread and blessed it. Then he broke it in pieces and he gave it to the disciples, saying, "Take it, for this is my body." So here's our four words. Jesus took the bread, he blessed the bread, he broke it into pieces, and he gave it. What does it mean to be taken, blessed, broken, and given? First starting with Jesus and then understanding that he has given us the invitation to follow him in this same pattern. Let's start with taken. The word taken, it means he was intentional. He selected the bread. We might think of it, a word that might be even better for us to understand this, is that he chose it, and that he was chosen, and that we are chosen. Think of it, for those of us who are married, likely you stood up front on a stage like this or out somewhere in front of your friends and family, and you might have a minister who helped you with your vows and started by saying, "Do you take so-and-so to be your husband, to be your wife? Do you choose them? Do you choose this relationship to be part of them? And for them to be part of you, and for you to have this life together." To be taken means to be chosen. It requires a recognition of someone's unique and inherent beauty, to acknowledge their significance, their importance, and their value, and to say, "I want you, I choose you, I take you." Jesus took the bread. Now, the opposite of being taken is being rejected, being left alone, being not chosen. And the reality is that we all have the experience of being rejected. And we all have wounds that come from being rejected, not being chosen. It might be professionally or romantically. We may have been rejected from an academic program that we didn't get into, or not selected for an athletic team. We might have not got a job. We may have wounds from being rejected when we ask someone on a date and we're hoping that that would be the start of a relationship. But while we chose them, they didn't choose us. And we carry around those wounds of being rejected. Some of us actually, we have voices in our heads that remind us that we've been rejected. It's hard for us to get out of it. We start to believe that we need to project into the world our value. We need to work hard to make sure that people know how valuable we are, so that hopefully they'll choose us to be friends, choose us to be a spouse, choose us for a job, choose us to be loved. And here Jesus shows us that God chooses us, takes us. And being chosen by God means that all those voices that tell us that we're not good enough, that we need to work harder, are lies. That at the core of our being, we are chosen, and we are chosen by God in love. And so part of our job, and this takes us, most of us, our entire lives, is to over and over and over uncover those lies, uncover those voices that continue to try and convince us that we are not loved, we are not lovable, we're not good enough, we haven't measured up, and instead to accept the fact that we have been taken, we have been chosen. That God is saying to us, I take you. You are unique. You are valuable. And the choosing of God is not competitive. It is compassionate. We live in a world, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where we seem to be trained to think everything in terms of competition, which means if I'm chosen, somebody else isn't chosen. If I'm accepted, someone else is rejected. If I get a job, somebody else can't have it. But God's economy is a grace economy. Which means when we wake up to the fact that we are chosen, and when we realize that we're chosen because of the flow of grace, we can't deny that to somebody else. It would void the fact that we are chosen in grace. And just because we are chosen because we're unique and we're valuable, we are set apart, we are taken, doesn't mean that someone else can't be. In fact, if we really understand grace, if we really understand the core of who we are taken and chosen by God, we have to also offer that to other people. Being chosen becomes the foundation to a powerful spiritual life of strength and joy. How do you build a strong foundation of confidence, of self-worth, in the healthiest sense of humanity? We start by acknowledging that we've been taken, we've been chosen by God. Jesus in John chapter 15 said to his disciples, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last." And so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. This is amazing. He says, you didn't choose me, but I chose you. You didn't come to me and say, oh, Jesus, Jesus, I choose you, and I hope you will choose me back. You didn't come to me that way. I came to you first and said, I see you as valuable, unique. I love you. I want you. I want to take you. I want to set you apart. And Jesus is saying, that's how this started. It wasn't you coming to me hoping that I might find you to have done something that has earned that value. No, no, no. He says, I chose you first. And that's what will help you bear fruit in your life, to be a really loving person, to go and love, as if you can start by really understanding that you're loved, you're taken, you're chosen. Second word is blessed. We have a word in English that we sometimes use in church, not a ton of other place, but if you grew up in church, maybe a generation ago or more, you've heard it, just benediction. And it's a word that comes from Latin and has two parts of it. The bene part just means good, and diction means to speak. And a benediction means to speak good. It's a way of talking about blessing. Sometimes in churches, there are points in the service where someone like me would get up and pronounce a benediction, would give a blessing to people. It's literally a good word spoken to you. Jesus took the bread, and after he took it, he blessed it. Pronounced a blessing. Blessing is the out loud voice that speaks the truth of our chosenness, that we are eternally loved. That chosenness that we are taken, that we just talked about, is proclaimed in a blessing, out loud, spoken into our lives. The good that God wants us to know about, spoken deep into our heart. The importance of a blessing that I believe all of our souls desperately long to hear is maybe given great evidence for in the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jesus' most famous sermon section, Matthew chapter 5 to 7 in one of the other Gospels. And he starts it by proclaiming that those who most people think are not blessed are blessed. So he talks about blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. And he goes on and on and on. People who others would look at and say, wow, your life does not look like it's going super well. You must not be blessed by God. Maybe you're not even chosen by God. And Jesus starts there. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are meek. You are blessed. He speaks good into their life. And he goes on to say that even when other people revile you and persecute you and say evil things against you, even when these voices come at you and say, you're cursed, you're not good, they come against you, you can hear blessing. It says, listen to the voice of blessing over and over and over to those who curse you, because the voice of blessing needs to become the predominant voice in our lives to build that strong foundation, reminding us that we're chosen, we're taken by God for relationship with Him and to love other people. Henry Nouwen, I mentioned earlier, who really writes a book on these four words, and he tells this story in it about blessing. He was a Catholic priest, and he spent a lot of his later life here just north of Toronto in a house, it was a community for adults with disabilities, all kinds of disabilities, and they built this community, a place where people could come and be cared for, and he committed a chunk of his life to doing that. And he tells a story. One day, one of the women who lived in that house came to him, her name was Janet, and asked him to bless her. And so as a Catholic priest, he said, my automatic response was, I took my thumb and I traced out the pattern of the cross on her forehead, kind of this natural ritualistic way of blessing her. And she came back and said, no, I need a real blessing. I need a special blessing. And he realized in that moment that she was longing. She has this deep longing to hear a good word about who God believes that she is. She needed something that would impact her deep in her soul. And so he said he gathered people sort of for their chapel service, and he told them that Janet had requested a special blessing, that she really felt that she needed that right now, and he was going to give that to her. And so she came up, stood with him, and he opened his arms to her, and she just went right in, had her head to his chest, and he embraced her. And he said these words, Janet, I want you to know that you're God's beloved daughter. You're precious in God's eyes. Your beautiful smile, your kindness to the people in your house, and all the good things you do show us what a beautiful human being you are. I know you feel a little low these days and that there is some sadness in your heart, but I want you to remember who you are, a very special person, deeply loved by God and all the people who are here with you. And at the pronouncement of that blessing, she looked up with a big smile and she was satisfied. She went and sat down, but then somebody else stood up and they walked up and said, I want a special blessing too. And so Henry gave them a specific special blessing. And then someone else, and then someone else. And all of a sudden, all of these men and women who lived in this house, in this community, were coming up for a blessing. So the last person that came up wasn't someone that lived in the house. It was a student that had come to work and to help out in the house. He was a great big athletic guy. He played football at one of the famous universities in the United States. Someone that we might think, wow, this is just a macho guy, doesn't need anything. And he came to Henry and he laid his head on his chest. And as Henry pronounced a blessing over him too, he noticed that tears were streaming down his face. See, our souls long for blessing. We need the good word from God to be spoken into our lives. We need it to become louder than all of the lies that tell us we are not good enough, not loved. And however tough we might think that we are, or macho, or independent, or self-sustaining, at the core, we need to know that we are blessed. God blesses us. How do we hear that voice? That voice that tells us our soul's worth. Well, today, hopefully you hear it later when we eat the bread and when we drink the wine together, when it goes into us, that all of this that Jesus has done, saying you're taken, you're chosen, and you're blessed, becomes internal for you. Again, a meal, eating, drinking, having something enter into you that speaks more than my words could speak, than maybe anyone's words could speak. But to remind you of that voice that Jesus heard in his baptism when he heard his Father say, this is my Son whom I love, or in whom I greatly delight. And for us to hear that same voice spoken to us with our name. Another way we might be taking scriptures that remind us of that blessing and meditating on them. Here's one, Psalm chapter 34, verse 8. The psalmist said, taste and see the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. And to be able to sit with that, read it over and over and over until it sinks deeper and deeper. Meditate on it. Memorize it. Allow it to become part of you. Taste and see. Have an experience that lights up your senses. That blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. And as you quietly take refuge, your life in the Lord. to know that you are blessed. You have his blessing. He speaks that goodness into your life, that you are loved, that you are valuable, that your soul can know its worth. And these blessings are not something we earn. We simply receive them. We take them. We believe them. Third word is that he broke the bread. Broken. This is the hardest one. It talks about suffering. It talks about pain. This is where we might really ask that question, but why did Jesus die? Why did Jesus die for our sins? And we see part of the answer is because suffering, because pain is part of the human condition, and not even Jesus goes around it or avoids it, which is what most of us want to do. Naturally, of course, is we want to spend our lives trying to avoid pain and suffering. Jesus shows us, though, that we must actually embrace it. We must go through it, that suffering can and will, if we allow it to, become a great teacher, a great builder-upper of our strength. It can actually build us up rather than tear us down. And yet it's so unpleasant, and no one wants to go through suffering. No one wants to go through pain. And for some people, we would say, this pain seems to be destroying me. For some people, maybe they would say, it does destroy us. Why? Because our pain and suffering often point out our insecurities, our fears, our deficiencies. They say a lot about who we are, and the things that hurt us most are the things that cut us deep in our identity. They are our failures. They're when we've been rejected. They've been when people who are supposed to love us have not loved us. And most of us throughout our lives will have times where those wounds have been deep, so painful. It's difficult for us to say that this is something that is unavoidable, and yet it's true. And we see here Jesus, even Jesus himself, chosen as he is, blessed as he is, also broken. But as we walk towards our suffering and our pain, which I think is the first step to acknowledge it, not to run from it, not always try to avoid it. By the way, if you spend your entire life trying to avoid pain, you will probably be someone who has experiences of even greater pain. Because if you try and avoid it altogether, even the slightest bit of suffering seems just something that you're unable to bear. And so our first step is to engage in that suffering, to acknowledge it, even to step into it. But how do we do that in such a way that it builds us up and it doesn't tear us down? And I think the key is this. We accept our brokenness underneath our blessing. You see, when we walk through suffering and pain without a blessing, the reason why it hurts so much is because our failures and our insecurities and our deficiencies seem to be a confirmation that we are unworthy, that we're unlovable. It hits us right deep down in our identity and tears apart who we actually are. But when we start with the fact that we're chosen and taken, when we start with the fact that we are blessed and that becomes our identity, then we can put our brokenness under the banner of blessing. And so our sufferings and our pain that attack us, where we're insecure, where we're scared, where we have deficiencies, does not need to attack us on the level of our identity. It doesn't have to take away who we are. You can't take away the chosenness and the blessedness. Then our sufferings can be something that become our teacher. Even though it's unpleasant, even though it hurts, can help us grow and be strengthened without tearing us apart because we have a strong foundation in who we are. The blessing must be louder than the curse. And when that is true, the pain or our struggles don't define us, they teach us. We've already found our definition in our chosenness and our blessedness. Galatians chapter 3 talks about how Jesus has done this. It says in verse 13 that Christ has rescued us from the curse pronounced by the law. So there was the law, and one of the things that the law taught you was that you can't always follow the law. At some point you realize you're a failure. When he was hung on the cross, he took upon himself the curse for our wrongdoing. For it is written in the scriptures, cursed is everyone who hung on a tree. When Jesus hung on a tree, people thought he's cursed. Of course, nobody blessed dies in a crucifixion. Through Christ Jesus, though, God has blessed the Gentiles. So that's all of us who aren't Jewish. With the same blessing, he promised Abraham, that is all those who are Jewish, so now we have everybody involved in this blessing, so that we who are believers might receive the promised Holy Spirit through faith. Jesus has made the blessing louder than the curse. He's flipped everything around. The curse doesn't need to define you. The blessing does. And we see that in Jesus. He goes to the cross and it looks like he's cursed. It's the worst thing that could happen to you. He takes all the evil of the world upon himself, and yet we see the vindication through the resurrection of blessing. Finally, our fourth word is given. Jesus then took the bread, he blessed it, he broke it into pieces, and he gave it. And when he gave it, the disciples, it said, they took it. So now they have a choice to take it. Now we have the sharing. And what we find is that all that we've talked about, our chosenness, our blessing, our brokenness becomes meaningful when we live for others, when we then give our lives to others. See, this is the amazing transition between the brokenness and the giving, is that bread can only be shared if it's first broken, that we actually find that when we embrace our brokenness, we actually come into unity with others. We see more easily the struggles and the hurts and the pains that other people are living out, and we find a way to give ourselves to those people. And not just in what we do, but in giving ourselves our own strength, our own joy. The spirit inside of us, searching for the spirit inside of other people, and finding that our peace and our joy in being chosen and blessed can be given to others. We live a life that finds its significance, all that spiritual significance, in then being given away. And we see that so clearly in Jesus giving his life in love for the world. And the pattern is you can do that too. You see that in Jesus. You see that, well, why does Jesus have to die? Because Jesus enters into what is inevitable for us, the suffering, but in the suffering, the opportunity to give his life away to other people. Jesus said elsewhere in the Gospel of John, I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat is planted in the soil and dies, it remains alone. But its death will produce many new kernels, a plentiful harvest of new lives. This picture of a kernel of wheat. Well, one kernel of wheat is just one life is what it represents. But what he's illustrating to these people that would have understood a lot more than most of us do about wheat is if you plant that kernel dies, but in its death, other kernels are planted and grow up and there's more life. That this is the pattern of life. It's giving yourself away, your individual life, giving it away to others so that so much more life can be lived. If I just live for myself, to myself, that's just one life. But if I'm willing to die to myself in order to give myself away to the world, then we see through the Spirit of God, life abounding everywhere, life being multiplied. And this is Jesus dying on the cross, showing us the pattern, representing what that looks like in a way that words are inadequate to fully describe. So we see in these four powerful words and symbolized in the bread and the wine, the experience of the spiritual life that Jesus wants to give to us. Those things are true of him and he wants them to be true of us. And so he instituted this ritual for his followers to eat and drink, to be part of the meal, to remind you, this is who you are. This is who we are together. And today, if I was going to answer the question, why did Jesus die? I would say to invite us to participate in the pattern of the spiritual life, all the things that we've talked about. It's a great invitation to come to the table, to come to the party with family and friends, and to be reminded this is who we are. And whether you're a lifelong church-going Christian person or whether this is brand new to you, today is an invitation for you to experience your chosenness. The blessing of God, to acknowledge your brokenness and to give your life away in love for others as Jesus has done for us. It's a wonderful, beautiful experience. And so now together we are going to eat the bread and drink the wine or the juice. And I hope you'll just take a few moments to be thinking through all that we've said and then to savor the bread, savor the cup in remembrance of all that Jesus invites us into. And so it says here in the Gospel of Mark that when Jesus had taken the bread, blessed it, he broke it, he gave it, and he said to his disciples, "Take, this is my body. Let's eat together and choose the one who has chosen us." And then you can take your juice or wine, as Jesus did, and presented it to his disciples, and hear him say, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many." And as we taste these two elements, I hope that today you have tasted and seen that the Lord is good and that he wants to speak good into your life. And so now we have some music for you to continue to contemplate this, think about this. And I hope today you'll walk away really understanding your chosenness and blessing, even as you may be experiencing in your life a brokenness, but also that we would come to a place of building such a strong foundation that we give our lives away. And so as we sing, feel free to sing along. You might just want to belt this out at home as we sing this blessing together, or you may want to allow the music just to permeate your mind as you quietly sit. That's up to you. But here are these words that I'll read to you, and then we'll sing them out together. A classic blessing from Numbers chapter 6. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace.